When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenwill. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm good. I say ahead of time, like, hey, let's start with small talk, and then you always ask me how I'm doing in a different kind of like tone, and so it catches me off guard every time.
The thing is, I genuinely want to know how you're doing.
Well, I'm genuinely great. Some notable things here. My parents are in town.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
Because of that, we're trying to be respectful of my time with them. So Robbie and I are recording this a little earlier in the morning than we normally do. So excuse my morning voice, first of all, and hopefully not morning brain. Secondly, a couple notable things happened this week, Robbie.
Wow.
Hit me. The Super Bowl happened.
Yeah, it did.
But during the Super Bowl, there was a trailer for Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, there was. We got that TV spot, which was super fun. And then the spot directed you to go online and watch this full 2-minute trailer. I loved it. I thought that it was exactly the kind of vibe that we've been thinking it would be, but to me that's a good thing because I'm excited about the kind of like Winter Soldier-y vibe. I loved seeing some Zemo shout outs there. What did you think?
I liked it. I can't wait to get into talking about this show because I have so many thoughts already and I've only seen the trailer. It does come across like it's going to be a Winter Soldier vibe, which to some Marvel fans is like their number one film.
Right.
And I think it's going to be a tight story and it's going to be well done and all of that. This actually, Robbie, led me to thinking, remember we talked about what's the best MCU movie versus what's the most rewatchable MCU movie? And I think we need to release those lists we're kind of coming up with at some point.
Right.
And I bring that up because certain movies I can objectively look at and go, that is so well done. That is better than it is rewatchable as far as for my preference. Okay, I'm making way too many judgments about a trailer and a show that I haven't seen. I think it's going to be so dope, and I can't wait to see how different it is for us to talk about it coming off WandaVision. Because it's obviously, I mean, there hasn't even been like a gunshot in WandaVision or a car chase. Like, it's like the opposite of an action movie. There has been a gunshot.
Right.
Monica shot at the close. But it's like a opposite of an action movie, and then this comes out, and it looks very much like a legit action movie. So that's a lot of rambling to say. I am excited to see how it goes. I think in general, also my preference tends to be shows like WandaVision. Not that we've had too many like WandaVision, but like the suspense, mystery, trying to figure out what's going on.
Sure.
That's Kyle's scene more than just a straight John Wick action movie.
Right.
But it doesn't mean I think those are bad. End of
I mean, so I think what I'm just really intrigued by about the show, the more I see it, is that it does have stuff that feels kind of Winter Soldier, parts of Civil War. And, you know, I don't know if you saw this, but the composer for this show is Henry Jackman, who composed the scores for Winter Soldier and Civil War. So there's definitely going to be a fun through line there. And I know that you in particular, as we covered a few weeks ago, have a special affinity for Civil War. Just stepping back from it and not really making a prediction one way or the other, I think what's really going to be intriguing about this show is that for the two leads here, this is really the only, I think it is the first time these characters have not been written by Marcus and McFeely and directed by the Russo brothers.
Well, and I was going to say it's the first time that they've been leads.
Oh,
in anything,
sure.
Really?
Yeah, no,
you
for
know,
sure.
So it'll be interesting to see them in that spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, in that way, they're kind of in the same spot as Wanda and Vision that we've talked about. So yeah, they'll have to be, they've both been so defined as being Cap's, you know, wingmen.
Written by the guy who writes Caps. You're right. A different writer now as a lead will be interesting.
Yeah, I just think creatively it'll be fun to see. It seems to me, and I think that this excites most people and it excites me, that they're really following up on those little scenes that we get in Civil War where Sam and Bucky are kind of like ribbing each other.
Yeah.
Which are always like, I always laugh at those moments in that movie even now. So I like kind of exploring that relationship. I thought the little stare contest thing at the end of the trailer was funny. I think I'm with you in that the final difference, and this is how I'll close this out, between this show and WandaVision to me is every trailer, every promo that we got for WandaVision, I was like, what the heck? Like, what is this turning into? Like, what? I didn't even really know how to be prepared. And then, like we talked about, the first and second episode were just like mind-blowing in how different they were. And I just don't think, I don't think it's a failing of Falcon Winter Soldier because it's not trying to do that. But I don't think that it will ever really be that in the same way. You know, like, in the same way that, like, I don't think anyone, when they saw Winter Soldier and Civil War, everyone was blown away by the sheer quality of them. But no one was like, whoa, like, this was mind-boggling and how different it is.
Right.
So
my last note on the trailer is that it seems like it's going to be very, very, very quality, visually, CGI-wise, set design, all mm-hmm. that stuff. Looks like it's going to be movie level. And I think at this point, we can come to expect that from Marvel. But that's awesome that we can come to expect it from Marvel, because I don't think every other show has always had that luxury. Whereas these now, between WandaVision and this trailer, the way Falcon was flying even, and kind of the mm-hmm. explosions. I know that's really nerdy, but how it looked.
Well, some of the choreography.
Super quality. Yeah, it looked like it was movie quality. Yeah. I truly think that show is going to feel like a six-hour movie that they kind of just split up into six parts. Even more than WandaVision, because WandaVision with the sitcom thing, right, is very like episodic. I think this is going to feel like a movie split up. Before I move on, let's put a pin in that, though, because obviously at some point we're going to get heavy into Falcon and the Winter Soldier. In fact, in like a month, we'll be in Falcon and the Winter Soldier land, and it'll be all Falcon and Winter Soldier talk. And I'm going to need to find a way to abbreviate the Falcon and the Winter Soldier because it's too long to say each time.
That's true.
And we maybe even have a few little tricks up our sleeve come that time. Who knows? Who knows? Just a little teaser out there. A little teaser out there. I also wanted to say my weekend, Robbie, was so great because if you follow us on Instagram at the FFW podcast,
I do.
I occasionally hop. I know you do. Thank you. I occasionally hop on there and do like a Kyle story. Just, I don't know the social media stuff that well. Robbie's our like master poster, okay? I just kind of hop in there and occasionally know how to hold down the record button and say something with no effects or anything cool. But for those of you who don't follow us, I did this little story asking people to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because the most recent review was from a guy named Farthole, which I said, you know, it was a very positive review. The review was that it's lit, which is great, but just the name Farthole, I didn't really want that to be the most recent, like, first review that shows up. And Robbie, dude, it was so much fun. Like, everybody went and did it. We were flooded with reviews, and it made my heart so warm. So that made my weekend good, too.
Everyone says this, but I really am struck by, I was talking to Candace about this last night, just how great our listeners are, and that, like, you know, it's just fun because in this kind of film and TV, especially like the comic side of it, like, these communities can often be like pretty contentious, and it can get like pretty negative in the conversations that happen around some of this stuff. And I am just like, not only do we have listeners that go and they review this stuff and they engage with us and they send us more questions than we are able to get to at this point, but also I just, you know, like, everyone is always positive. Like, we just have, I feel like a really great, a great vibe in this community, and I'm grateful for that. So if you're one of those listeners, thank you.
No doubt. Thanks for listening. And by the way, Fart Hole has now been pushed down at least a ways. So the review is still there, but, you know, at least it's not the top one.
And by the way, Fart Hole, if you're listening, we are very grateful.
I said that on the Instagram story too. I love Fart Hole. I love everybody, even Fart Hole. let's talk about WandaVision episode 6. This show gets me every week. At this point, it's must-see television. I can't even explain it. I get legitimately excited when Friday rolls around, which is so much fun. Before we intro the episode, though, can I do a few leftovers that we had from last week's episode from comments and questions and concerns from listeners? But,
please
Robbie,
do.
There's not as many today because most of them were talking about the same few points.
Right,
so I kind of
right.
summed them up into a three of them, I think, okay?
Okay, perfect.
One of which I found very interesting, but it's a small detail, is where is the beekeeper?
Hmm.
Lots of people keep asking that, and that's so true. We found out that the beekeeper was a guy in a hazmat suit, and then the Hex turns that person into like the equivalent of what that era would look like. And so they took the hazmat suit to a beekeeper suit.
Mm-hmm.
But we see Wanda rewind that, which now we know she kind of is censoring it. And yet, what happened to the guy? Does that mean because she rewound it that he's not in there anymore? Does that mean that he's still in there trying to get out? Does that mean that now he's become a character in this show where he's now like brainwashed and is a beekeeper in Westview? Interesting, I thought.
Yeah, that is interesting. I always assumed that she like forced him back out of the bubble, but I guess we never saw that.
Well, and if she had done that, wouldn't they be checking in on him? Because now he's like Geraldine would have information from the inside.
True.
I feel like that'd be a huge thing because every time someone breaks the barrier of the Hex, it's a big story.
Yeah.
But interesting. The second and probably the most brought up thing in these emails was who the aerospace engineer is because we asked that.
Right.
So here are the leading candidates that people have thrown out. And these probably won't be a surprise to you, Robbie. But lots of people tossed out, is it Reed Richards?
Hmm.
I feel like it's probably too soon for them to be doing that. And that would be a massive swing. But we do know the Fantastic Four are coming.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a stupid guess.
No. I mean, and that could be really fun because, you know, this could be almost the equivalent to Hawkeye's appearance in the first Thor movie, where I could imagine them bringing in Reed Richards, not as Mr. Fantastic yet, and instead just as this kind of super genius, which he is in the comics and would almost certainly be in the MCU. So that could be a fun thing also to just give him some, we always talk about, you know, any more development, the more you kind of give us movie by movie buildups, the better. So I would be very excited about that. And I don't think that would be Marvel rushing anything because I think that they've got a history of doing, you know, these little quasi cameo, quasi like planting the root appearances by folks right. that will later become bigger.
Another candidate that I personally love is it a Skrull? Like, is it one of Monica's friends that she had met, right, back in right. Captain Marvel as a kid?
Right.
That would be interesting.
So, yeah, I saw specifically some folks were thinking that it might be Talos's daughter, right?
That was one of the options. That's an even bigger leap to me because now we're saying that she went on to get like a degree in this stuff or like became an engineer.
Right.
Or maybe it is. And Monica just refers to her as an engineer as part of the cover.
Yeah. Maybe I'm misremembering this or maybe it was just never really told to us in a straightforward way, but I couldn't remember if Talos had a daughter or a son, but I do know that in this episode, she refers to the engineer as a he, like as her guy. So
yeah,
if it is a daughter, which is what I feel like I remember from Captain Marvel, then that would seem to at least take that character out of the running. But as you're saying, that doesn't mean it couldn't be some other Skrull.
Right. Maybe just that she had built some kind of relationship with them. Right. And so there's another one that we don't know, maybe. Lastly, these guys specifically aren't engineers, but I can't stop thinking about, is somebody like Doctor Strange or Clint even going to make an appearance here to help with the Wanda thing? And that's totally not an engineer. What's fun about this is we're about to get this answer, because in the actual episode, I think that's who they're driving to go meet, right? The person that was going to get them into the Hex, they're going right now to meet. So I think this is not just a offhanded Easter egg. This is a key figure in this finale.
Right.
So if you're setting it up like that, I'm thinking it is going to be somebody notable, right?
Yeah.
It seems like you're building it up. So if it was just a random character we haven't met, that might feel like a letdown, storytelling wise.
Yeah, unless it is, like, that's where the Reed Richards thing would be very satisfying to me. Okay.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Because it's a character that everyone is aware of. And I would also like that because, you know, they've done a good job so far of grounding Monica within this kind of particular world of knowing that people like Captain Marvel exist, like almost, I mean, really before anybody except for Fury. And so she's kind of had this particular perspective, even pre-Iron Man, pre-Avengers. So I think it would be cool to connect someone like Reed Richards to her so that by the time we were to get a Fantastic Four movie, we wouldn't have to have that movie be something that's such a full-on origin story. You know what I mean? Because he's been rooted in the same storyline here that she is.
Well, and that was actually something I was going to bring up. I kind of love that even though we know certain things are coming, right? Like we talk about, we know the X-Men or mutants are coming at some point. We know Fantastic Four characters are coming. They never tell us specifically how or where they will be in their story arc when they're introduced. So, right. Like, for example, we often picture these characters, like Reed Richards, in his, like, most complete form. That's what your brain goes to, right? Uh-huh. But, like, we don't know that this is not a young Reed Richards.
Sure.
You know, maybe not super young, but somewhere along the line. Or, like, for the X-Men, are they going to jump in and have us just meet Charles, and he's already got his powers, and he's already 40 years old?
Right.
Or are we meeting Charles when he's 10 years old? And going from there. Like, I'm just saying, we don't know that yet. So even though we know they're coming, how they do it can still be really fun.
Absolutely.
And the last leftover, we talked last week a ton about the mutants, obviously. So if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and listen to that episode. There's like a 30-minute discussion at the end of that about mutants specifically. And I brought up the point over and over again that we know the X-Men are coming, but we don't know if they're going to do the mutant gene.
Mm.
And a couple listeners said that Kevin Feige, in his press conference when he said this, did specifically say mutants are coming, not just X-Men.
Mm.
I think, weirdly, both things could still be true, Robbie. Like, I don't think that means I'm wrong. He still could just be saying mutants, like referring to them as we know them, but that doesn't mean they run with the mutant gene storyline.
Right.
Or maybe they do, and I'm just way off too. So I'm just saying, I'm just saying, it is good to know that he did say mutants, but we don't know that yet.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, I do think that.
Well, and in general, Robbie, you and I have talked a lot about how you have to be a little bit careful taking too much stuff that people say off screen as canon, right?
For sure.
Not that Kevin doesn't know what he's doing, but if every word these directors say, for example, is canon, then some things would be really conflicting, as we've talked about in previous episodes.
Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like, you know, we talked about this with Deadpool. You've talked about it kind of with Wolverine. I think what's interesting, though, is aside from Wolverine, whose origin is kind of all wrapped up in a lot of things besides him just being a mutant, I think everyone else is so defined by that particular struggle and by the kind of prejudice that's come with being a mutant that I think not only would it would be a huge swing to try to divorce them from that, but I also think there'd be a lot of backlash from the fan community if they were to to put in, like, you know, Nightcrawler or Cyclops and say that they were just somehow given powers in a lab or something and not mutants. And, you know, on the flip side, you could say, well, but hey, we've gotten all these other movies of them being mutants, so what's the problem? But I do think that that would maybe be a bridge too far for a lot of folks.
I do too, but I don't think the backlash would be coming from Kyle Sconewell, just on the record.
That's fair.
Is it fair? Okay. Let's talk about WandaVision episode 6, because I can't
wait. Let's do it. Okay, so WandaVision episode 6 is entitled All New Halloween Spooktacular, which is fantastic. It's written by Peter Cameron, who actually wrote on the last episode as well, and Chuck Hayward, which, like, a little suspicious there with that last name. I guess we'll have to see what the connection is. We have this one directed again by Matt Shakman. We referred last episode to the fact that he is set to direct all of these episodes, which is fantastic because, by way of leading us into this episode, again, Kyle, just knocking it out of the park. Quality is at peak levels as ever, just consistently great. I loved this episode.
I'm still thinking about how that last guy's name is Hayward. That's like being named Karen, you know, currently. If you're a fan of this show, like, oh, why'd you have the name of Hayward? Dang it. Yeah, the quality was so good. Okay, so we've tried to take our listeners through each episode linearly. Robbie and I had a discussion this time that because they were split up in separate groups, these main characters, it might be kind of fun to go group by group this time.
Yeah.
The timeline's getting a little spooky, if you will, on when things are happening. So instead of thinking strictly through the episode, let's talk group by group. And I think let's start with Pietro, the kids, and Wanda, because that's kind of the first group, but that's also, yes, like the first group we see.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Malcolm in the Middle vibe, which you were right about.
Thank you.
Okay. Robbie and I on Apple phones love using the invisible ink thing, so it's like you have to, like, work to see the message. And he started watching the episode, and I think, what, 30 seconds in, you did an invisible ink message just said, I told you about Malcolm in the Middle. I was like, okay, you're right.
I had to pause it so that I didn't miss anything, but so that I could also immediately get the satisfaction of telling you I told you so.
Yeah. Didn't you laugh to yourself so many times about how accurate this was again? Because now we're getting our era of childhood.
Yeah.
But having the kids, like, call each other, like, Dorkosaurus as Rex or whatever, and holding the camera and talking to the camera, and again, just the shots, the movement, the dialogue, the music.
Yeah.
The one, like, metal guitar solo, you know, like, kind of 90s, like, grungy.
I mean, I think it's hard for me to say this because every theme song has been so much fun, but this one was, I mean, this one and maybe last week are peak for me, which again is hard because we had the, like, Bewitched one, but it's just like the stills on Wanda, like she's brushing her teeth and then barging in and, like, Vision. It's just like, it's such a perfect, I wound up watching it a couple times and Candace and I were both just freaking out over how much, again, they nailed it. And you're right. I think starting with last week, as we were kind of getting into the full house growing pains of it all, I think this stuff is hitting more directly with what is nostalgic to me personally. So maybe that's why it's hitting a little bit harder as well.
Dude, and then I don't know this yet, but if that was supposed to represent the 90s or early 2000s, I can't wait to see if they do one more of these, Robbie, into the mid-2000s, because that is going to be my era. There's no way you can do a mid-2000s one without doing some kind of talking head office style, right? Because that's what started in mid-2000s. And I could totally see it, right? You get, like, a little interview with Wanda about something, some event, and then you see the funny event, right? Like, what else could they do? It's got to be that.
That's so true.
Because that started a whole era of Community, 30 Rock, like, you know, all those.
Right.
Parks and Rec. I don't know. Will be interesting to see. Okay, anyways, I loved the Malcolm in the Middle vibe. It's so fun. Did you notice that right off the bat they showed Pietro with powers? We talked all about. Is he? He's not going to have powers. He might have powers. We don't know that yet. The first scene, he's powers. So.
Right. And before we forget, I actually thought it was really interesting that in the previously on section, we get two scenes with Aaron Taylor Johnson's Pietro from Age of Ultron.
Right.
And just to kind of further highlight that this is not the same person. I mean, like, we obviously know that, but like compare that to, and I think that this is interesting to say, and we'll talk more about this, but I saw a lot of people after this episode saying, oh, well, look, see, what's happening is it's just Evan Peters is now playing Quicksilver. It's the same Quicksilver from the MCU. I think that there's a lot more going on there. And I think one of the reasons is because, like, whenever we had Don Cheadle swapped in for Terrence Howard as Rhodey, I don't think that, like, there aren't many callbacks or flashbacks to, like, Terrence Howard playing Rhodey, right? Because it's like they're just sort of trying to pretend in some ways that Terrence Howard was never there. So, like,
but that's because this is not the same thing at all.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but I feel like some people are taking it that way, which is just strange to me because even Darcy said that it was a recasting. So, like, in universe, and based on Wanda's conversations with Pietro that we'll get into, they're really hammering in that he looks different and is different than the Pietro that we have known from Age of Ultron.
Okay, hold on, though. To be fair to them, it's still so confusing.
Right.
Because I don't get it, Robbie. We're getting this different looking Pietro that this episode has gone a long ways to show us is like an implanted actor. Uh-huh. He basically even admits to Wanda.
Right.
That, yeah, I'm different, but just kind of get over it. Like, this is how it is. But then, I know I'm bouncing around like crazy, but we have to talk about this. Like, the jump scare where Wanda again looks at him and it's dead. It's this Pietro, but with the bullet holes of the other Pietro.
Right.
So that doesn't make sense to me. Can you explain it to me? Like, what is this? It's like she's still seeing the other one, kind of. But his face didn't change to the other one.
Right. No, I may know the same thing. I think it's really interesting what that says even about what the jump scare with Vision was, right? Because we debated that at the time. Is that her kind of having her own like PTSD-inspired flashback? Or is that her for a moment seeing Vision as he really is? And I think the jump scare with Pietro combined with what we saw happen to Vision when he left the bubble tells me that that is sort of what she is projecting based on her own kind of trauma. Because, yeah, like, it doesn't make any sense that we would be seeing Evan Peters, Pietro, with all those bullet holes in him, because that wasn't, like, again, in the preview thing, that was Aaron Taylor Johnson, that wasn't Evan Peters. So I think we'll talk more about this for sure, but, like, this episode really highlights to me how much Wanda, even if all of this is coming from her, like from her powers, she is not in control of it all. And if anything, I think we see that she's becoming more confused and more unsettled by the whole thing.
Okay, I know I'm bouncing around like crazy, but I have so many theories here. I'm not going to lie to you. For a second, my brain went the route of, would it be possible that they recovered the Avengers, Age of Ultron, Pietro's body and inserted that back into the hex. And then Wanda made him come to life and look like that. Like hear me out on this. So we know that Vision's body was getting tested on and torn to shreds. Wanda brings it back somehow into Westview. And now Vision is recreated because of Wanda, but he still has some Vision in there because he has instincts to want to explore. He wants to question these things. He still has his powers. So in some way, he still is Vision. So that made me think, like, who is Pietro? Why is he here? Like, who brought him in here?
See,
like, why was he cast in this play? Then is it possible that the outside world sent in a dead body and that's what happened? I know it sounds insane.
Well, it's not. It's definitely.
But then I thought about in Age of Ultron, did they even recover his body? I think they did.
Right.
I guess.
Yeah, Clint does.
I guess we don't even know what happened years ago. I mean, that thing would be decaying by now.
For sure. I mean, it's been like a decade. I don't know.
It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but I just can't figure out who is casting him.
Yeah,
which Robbie, by the way, is the biggest question I have for all of this. I still don't get it. And we're going to get into the Agnes conversation in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But even now, a game changer was when they're walking around, Herb now.
Yeah.
Herb said to Wanda, do you want anything changed?
Yeah.
So how does Herb now have some level of awareness? And who's bringing in Pietro? I can't figure it out.
Well, but the thing is, you look back and Herb sort of always has, or at least since episode 3, right? Because he was on the verge of saying that thing to Vision. And then even like the doctor had that moment where he was like, oh, well, you know, small towns, you can't ever escape. Where it's like everyone, I can't quite tell how much anyone knows. Because sometimes...
Then how are Pietro and Agnes different? Because yes, people have had awareness. Like I noticed even... Mm. The other day, there's a scene in episode 5 when the mailman's walking by and he says, don't worry, your mom won't let him get away.
Right.
To the dog.
Right.
So even the mailman is like aware that your mom is different.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's a level of awareness that it seems like most characters have here. Although I question, does like Norm have it, etc. But then Pietro comes in. And Agnes, specifically those two, have like a next level of awareness. I mean, Pietro is like specifically talking with Wanda.
Yeah.
Like, where did your accent go? And Wanda's testing him because she knows it's not her brother.
Right.
And he basically responds to her by saying, get over it, Wanda. Like, this is how it is.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah, man, we get some really interesting lines from Pietro, which, by the way, Evan Peters did an incredible job. Maybe, like, I thought his performance here was kind of standout in terms of the 90s of it all. Like, the sort of, like, because there were so many shows where there was, like, the bum uncle that was couch crashing and couldn't get his life together. And he just did it. I thought he nailed that over and over again, especially with kind of this underlying uneasiness with him clearly not being the person that Wanda remembers. I just thought that it was kind of a nuanced performance, and I thought it was well done. And also, by the way, which this may not mean a ton because, you know, even Wanda and Vision have been acting differently from their MCU counterparts. But I would say, like, we're not getting anything to suggest here that this is like the Quicksilver from the X-Men movies, personality-wise. Like, I don't think that it's being clearly tied to that.
I mean, he's kind of a brat more than the Quicksilver we know is, and that's from the X-Men movies. He's kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's fair. I mean, he's a little bit...
I think
like,
I just
he's
disagree
like
with you on that. Sorry.
Wow.
I mean, he... I guess in the X-Men movies, there's a couple scenes where he's a little more, like, insecure about his past and, like, who his dad is and stuff like that, and there are times where he... I'm thinking about this right now because I didn't think that was what I was going to be talking about. But
no, I mean, it's for sure.
But he's
Evan
like a
Peters.
Brat.
Yeah, but I just don't. But I mean, part of that is just the way that, like, I mean, everything I've seen Evan Peters in, he kind of has this certain aura about him. And so the fact that we have, I mean, that's American Horror Story, that's X-Men, that's here. But I'm just saying, I don't think that, I mean, like, for instance, we never get a scene of him, like, famously, when Quicksilver is going in super speed mode in the X-Men movies, that is portrayed a certain way, right? Where, like, everything's kind of paused around him, and that's the sort of shtick. Like, we don't get a scene like that here. We don't get something...
His powers look identical to the Avengers Pietro powers in this one.
Right. I mean, I think it's fair to say that there's some commonality. I just don't know that there's any continuity.
Okay, I think that's fair. Let me just keep raising questions about this, though, because I feel like there were so many questions that came up.
Okay.
They're kids. I know the comic kids, okay?
Right.
I'll just say it. Are these kids mutants? Are these kids real?
Yeah.
So that's the only other characters it seems like Wanda doesn't control. So on the same note.
Uh-huh.
Because they age on their own, they get powers on their own. Also, it's interesting to watch how episode by episode, Wanda and her family, they're getting a little more lenient with showing their powers to the point now where it's like they don't care. They're just the whole town can know that they're flying or shooting red things or going super speed. Whereas like four episodes ago, she was doing everything to conceal it, as far as Vision even putting a pillow in front of his face to see that he doesn't look like that. Let's talk about her kids. Monica says, oh, her kids are real. But then I'm like, wait, how can that be real? The entire world seems fake, right? Like, she didn't have a real pregnancy. They didn't have a real aging period.
Right.
But if the kids are real, maybe that explains why she can't control them. And then a much bigger question. I know I'm doing too many tangents because my mind is racing. Is this how mutants actually are introduced?
Yeah, I mean, that's
a great... Is that what we were led to believe with the Charles telepathic thing at the end and the super speed?
I mean... That's a great...
Oh, gosh, that was so much.
It's an interesting thought. I think my first response to the mutant thing is if that is the case, then I don't know how that leads to other mutants existing.
Okay, pause, because then my thought was, here's a hot take. My wife actually came up with this.
Wow.
Do you remember that scene where Darcy tells Monica that her cells are transforming?
Yeah, which I want to get to.
Okay, we'll get to that. Then I wonder if that's how they do it.
Yeah.
Something about Wanda's kids are the first mutants, but other people that keep breaking the wall could develop some kind of cellular changing, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting.
Bouncing around so much.
I mean, the X-Mansion's supposed to be in, like, upstate New York, which isn't, you know, far from here, so you can imagine. But, I don't know. I mean, well, okay, so first off, let's talk about Tommy and Billy here before I get too far afield. I do want to point out, because we haven't even talked about Wanda and Vision's kind of classic costumes here, which we should, because I really love the way that they envision those. But I also want to point out that Tommy and Billy, they go for Halloween dressed as their comic book counterparts, right? So we have the Speed and Wiccan costumes that readers will recognize there, which is just kind of fun, and just does hammer in again that not only are these characters named after the comic book twins, they have these powers and they have their same kind of costumes in this episode, just like Quicksilver and WandaVision do. So that's fun. But yeah, I mean, that...
How are they going to explain the powers then?
I think that that's one of the most interesting questions, and the show acknowledges it by kind of asking in that last episode what the kids are. I don't know. I mean, because the thing is, if you're going to say, well, they're the first mutants, that still doesn't make sense of their ability to grow and age at will. Like, that's not something that a mutant would just necessarily have. And it's weird if they each have their own powers, why do they both have the ability to do that?
That's the thing, is like, I feel like they can't be real actually because of the aging, the no pregnancy, all that stuff, that Monica is just legitimately confused when she said that.
Yeah.
Like, I guess we'll know in a few weeks, but how it actually ends is going to matter. Because when Wanda gets pulled out of this or whatever, are her kids left there as actual humans?
Yeah. Well, and what happens if one of them were to try to leave the bubble like Vision did?
Right, because were they alive on the outside ever?
I mean, it does.
We don't know.
It does raise a lot of interesting questions. I mean,
does it seem to you, and I'm not a comic guy, but it seems like six episodes in a lot of ways, this actually is turning out to be a comic translated more literally than I ever thought they would do.
Hmm.
Like, it does seem like they are hinting the House of Misery thing, where it's like she is making this reality out of her grief. And now they have the kids come in. They're literally named Tommy and Billy. And now we're seeing they do have the powers from the comics. I'm not saying I'm let down. I'm just saying it seems like in a lot of ways this is becoming a literal translation of a comic story.
Yeah. Yeah, I would
more
say.
More than I thought, I guess.
I would say more, yes and no. I mean, more than I thought is fair. But at the same time, we have this whole thing going with S.W.O.R.D. and Monica and Darcy. Right. And Vision, frankly, like in the House of M story, you know, Vision is also dead, but we don't have this. It's just very different because in that story, Wanda basically just recreates all of reality. Like she just creates a whole new, it's not like there's a bubble and you're on the inside or the outside. It's that like there's a you know, kind of snap of the fingers and suddenly everyone has a fully different life. And so like in that comic, gotcha. You have like Spider-Man wake up and he is now like, you know, married to Gwen Stacy who never died and like all of this stuff.
So I just bring that up because are her kids going to actually be Wiccan right. and Speed or not?
Well, and that's the other, the interesting thing to me on the outside of this is a lot of people more recently, I would say, are really attached to the Wiccan character in particular. Like I would say that that character has a decent following in the comic community. And so I wonder if Kevin Feige, you know, is wanting to actually grow that character and you know, in the comics, he becomes part of the Young Avengers. I think Speed does as well. And notably, we also have Cassie Lang as a part of the Young Avengers. And at times we have Vision, you know, a version of Vision and a version of Vision's kid become part of the Young Avengers. So I'm wondering, like, are these characters going to stick around and grow and be part of that and kind of meet up with Cassie? And are we going to get a whole sort of Young Avengers deal? Or, yeah, is this just going to be something that kind of fades away, which is more what happens with the House of M twins, right? Because those are, I think what's interesting talking about how this is adapting the comics is those are two different, like we're dealing kind of with House of M over here and dealing with that Children's Crusade comic I was telling you about over there. And those in some ways are almost like contradictory in terms of where they leave the twins, which I love because, again, I just have no idea what they're going to do with them because I have no idea who they are and what they are.
I see this show is becoming in a way kind of like a game of Clue to me because I'm left trying to figure out who of these characters are A, real. Like we know Wanda is alive and real. Are her kids part of that? Are they not under her control? They're actual human beings that are maybe given these powers in this hex, but wouldn't have powers outside of the hex possibly. But in the hex, are they still real humans? Then who is in there that is like an actual resident of the town in New Jersey that has now been mind controlled, right? Like Norm and
right.
Herb maybe. Like that's another set of people. And then C, who in this group is inserted from the outside and or somebody else? Like Monica was, like Vision kind of is. Is Pietro inserted from the outside?
Right.
Is Agnes inserted from the outside? And well, I'm still in the middle of this Clue game trying to figure out which yeah. one's which.
Well, and that's, you know, to kind of go back to the Pietro and Wanda and the kids portion of this episode, I just think that we get some stuff that's clearly pointing, like you said, to Pietro being a plant of some sort because he's kind of explaining away the differences there. Like he's sort of remembers things in a way that makes me think he's just been briefed almost, or that someone has kind of told him what he's supposed to remember. Because at the very right. beginning, to kind of go chronologically again, you know, Wanda comes down and she shows off her costume, which she explains by saying it's a Sokovian fortune teller costume, which is really fun because how else do you explain that super kind of weird head
like thing sexual she has. costume? Right. Yeah.
And then, by the way, I also love that Visions is explained as being yes. like a Mexican wrestler thing,
which is great.
Right. But then they have that little convo and he's like, oh, it's just like this time, and we get the kind of Malcolm in the Middle style cutaway flashback. And then she's like, that's not how I remember it. And we get a really interesting line that Candace actually highlighted for me where he says, oh, you probably just suppressed a lot of the trauma.
That's because he has been briefed by somebody to just say those kinds of responses.
Yeah, yeah.
When he's wrong on his past.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, and then later we get even more of that because he's clearly trying to dig, right? Like he's like, hey, look,
okay,
you know.
Yeah, right. Right. When he says, like, you trust me, I'm your brother. It's almost like he's trying to get that information out for somebody else. Okay.
Exactly.
I think there is some kind of producer to this.
Exactly.
We talk about that a lot.
That's what I was going to say.
There is a producer that's not just Wanda, but I want to talk about Wanda controlling things too. But I think there is some producer, like you're saying, like he's been briefed, like go in, this is your role. A line I particularly found interesting was he says to Wanda, look, all I remember is getting shot up in Sokovia. I'm misquoting this.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I hear your voice and that's all I know, blah, blah, blah. Go ahead and read it if you have it.
Yeah, he says, I got shot like a chump in the street for no reason at all. And the next thing I know, I heard you calling me.
To me, that feels like that's what he was told to say about
totally
your past.
Totally agree. Like, I think...
So who's doing that then?
I know, because he's it's like he has these things that feel so forced where it's like, oh, man, you know who would have loved this? Mom and Dad. And she responds, like, that's exactly... I mean, clearly what she's wanting to hear, because we've talked about how this is related to sort of, you know, maybe the life that she always envisioned as ideal that she didn't get to have. And so you can tell how much that pleases her to think that this thing she's created is something that someone else thinks they would have appreciated. But it's clearly him trying to, like, needle his way in. And...
Okay, but then that's what makes me think that he's from the outside.
Yeah.
Not like Mephisto, not a devil, I don't think. This is my guess. It feels like somebody needs to know, how did Wanda do this? Mephisto wouldn't need to know how Wanda did it, right? Hear me out on this theory?
No, totally.
So it feels like it's almost like Hayward or somebody on the outside sends him in to find out, like earn her trust and then ask her, how is she doing this?
I think that could totally be right, because... I mean, and that's interesting, because we've gone back and forth about what's going on with Hayward here, and we get even more info on that in this episode, because we find out that not only is Hayward obviously hiding something and trying to get Monica and Darcy and Jimmy Woo off of his trail, but then we find out that he's tracking Vision specifically. You and I have already talked before about how there's some kind of fishy stuff about Wanda breaking in and whether we're getting the full story there, and why was Vision all taken apart, and, you know, what kind of interest does S.W.O.R.D. have in him? And yeah, you could be right. Like, in the same way.
And on that map, it says reacquiring asset.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting use of words.
Yeah.
That Vision is the asset.
Well, and... You know, to go back to some of these conversations we had around the first Avengers and Winter Soldier with what S.H.I.E.L.D. was doing, you could see why, if you wanted to kind of take away the more malicious aspect of this and just say, well, Hayward is just kind of a Nick Fury type figure, you could see why, one, he would have an interest in making sure that Vision is locked down, because we've talked about, I mean, Vision is, you know, unless he's stabbed by this weapon from Thanos, basically invincible. And Wanda is arguably the most powerful person in the MCU. And so if nothing else, he could just be kind of in that Fury, General Ross space of, like, we have to lock these people down because they can't just be allowed to run around and wreak havoc. And by that same token, he could be trying to figure out the extent of Wanda's powers and, you know, on the sort of darker side of it, trying to figure out how he could utilize that, or how S.W.O.R.D. could utilize that somehow to maybe add to their protection against a future Thanos kind of a thing, you know?
Okay, while we're talking about Hayward, do you want me to stay outside of the bubble, or do you want me to transition to Wanda? You choose. It's your choice. Robbie's choice.
Oh, wow. Robbie's choice. I think we stay inside the bubble. Let's talk about Wanda a little bit.
Okay. Okay, so here's a theory I'm running with. Do you think it's possible that whenever Wanda's grief or emptiness is so great and her eyes turn red and she kind of turns into her Scarlet Witch mode, is it possible that she almost has, hear me out on this, like a split personality? Or not a split personality, but whenever she's doing the Scarlet Witching, that she, it's so emotional, it's so intense,
uh-huh,
that she doesn't remember it. It's almost like she turns in, like, this is a horrible example. It's almost like a werewolf or a vampire where when they're in that mode, she right. doesn't realize what she's doing. So all this time, she's kind of saying, it's not on me and I'm not controlling them. But what she doesn't realize is that Wanda, which is like calmed down and the Wanda we know a little bit more, doesn't think she's doing all this. Like, she knows she's built this reality for Vision to exist and she wants this family, but she doesn't think she's doing hiding the kids. And she doesn't think she's, is it possible though, that as we see at the end of the show, when she gets crazy, like a fit of rage, she throws Pietro, like launches him for saying something, pauses the whole thing, which is important, I think, and then expands the whole thing in like this giant explosion. Is it possible that when we come back to her next episode, she's not going to remember doing that?
That's kind really of a theory
I'm starting
idea.
To think.
Yeah.
Instead of that, it's somebody else controlling her. Is it that she is doing it, but when she snaps out of it, she doesn't remember that she did? So when she says, I don't remember how this all started, she really doesn't. But it's more just because when she says she has so much loneliness and so much emptiness, that in that she went into Scarlet Witch mode, created this all, and then all of a sudden like woke up from it and was like, whoa, what is this?
So that could be the case.
I don't think I'm crazy, by the way.
I know. I don't think you're crazy. I don't think that that is the whole story because of what we were just talking about with, like, I do think somebody else is involved. That doesn't necessarily mean someone else is involved in what's happening to Westview, but I do think someone is involved in some of the events. Like the Pietro thing, I do think he was brought in to on behalf of someone, whether it was Hayward. I also think the same thing kind of explains, like, it's always...
Okay, me too, but I'm going less down the route of a Mephisto or Agnes being some supernatural power.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that, yeah, someone else is inserting characters, like Sword is what I'm thinking, is trying to insert things. But that Wanda is the ultimate, like, quote unquote, power in this.
Well,
one more example to back my point up. There are a lot of times when we've seen Wanda use her powers in the past when they're like emotionally driven. So she comes out of the first fallen house in Ultron and she's pissed now. And that's when she first learns to like shoot the red things, right?
Right.
Then, like, for example, when she finds out that Quicksilver has died, she like bursts into this giant ball of red energy that we hadn't seen before. We'd seen her shoot little ones, but we had not seen this huge like explosion.
That's true.
And so there's a lot of times like that where even against Thanos, it seems like when she channels this like rage or fear or sadness, it can increase her powers to levels we haven't seen. Hence the line from Jimmy Woo saying, we've never seen her have powers nearly to this degree. But that's what I'm wondering, is if as the sadness gets deeper, do the powers like that get stronger and her memory gets worse?
I think that's a really interesting theory. And I wouldn't be surprised if that is at least partially accurate. I mean, I do think, like we've said, this show is definitely exploring grief and trauma. And you're right. Her powers have always been kind of specifically keyed into that and her like emotional state, which has been, you know, it understandably rocky. I think what's interesting to me, and the reason why I'm not sure that the sword explanation makes sense with these characters being inserted, and the reason I keep circling back to this is because I do think that this is related to what you're saying somehow. Like, we talked before about how not only do you have people being inserted, but they seem to be inserted at such a time where, like, Vision is about to kind of ask a hard question, or where, like, there's about to be kind of a blip in the program. You know, like, whenever Agnes comes over, and I think it was last episode, with the doghouse and stuff, but then even before that, when she would kind of show up randomly. And at the beginning of that episode, right, where, like, we talked about her knowing that the kids were crying and being there to hold them. And it's like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, Pietro was obviously sent in right as Wanda and Vision are about to have this very candid conversation about what's going on. And that kind of throws that conversation out. And so who would have an interest at making sure that Wanda and Vision don't kind of together figure out what's going on? Like, because Sword wouldn't have, like, Sword ostensibly would want this whole thing to end, so they wouldn't have any interest in preventing that. But who would? And that goes back to, like, is there someone, whether it's like a mystical supernatural person or not, is someone kind of manipulating Wanda somehow and wants to make sure that she kind of keeps chugging along in this world?
There are potentially a few characters that are important that we haven't met yet. It's possible. Like, we've never met a Ralph character.
True.
We have not met who Monica is going to see as the engineer who can get her in.
Uh-huh.
Like, because this engineer that can get her in must have a huge amount of power and influence to figure out how to do that hex stuff.
Right.
And then is there a, like we keep saying, is there a Mephisto devil type that we haven't met? Like, I think it also should be noted that there are still little potential Easter eggs that hint at Mephisto.
Right.
I don't think it is going to be Mephisto, but did you catch that line from Pietro when he says, "Unleash hell, demon spawn"?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Now, look, that could just be him being a Boston 90s guy and being funny, right? Like,
right.
A lot of kids, you know, demon spawn is a slang for a troubled child. Like,
right.
That's not – or is it intentional?
Right.
Unleash hell, demon spawn, as if, like, Wanda did do some kind of deal with the devil and this would be a demon spawn.
Right. Which,
so,
yeah.
I still don't know.
Yeah.
Ah, they keep hinting at it, but I don't know. I don't think it's that.
I think
because we're getting so late without showing
yeah.
that.
Well, but what,
it's possible.
What's so interesting about the show is how aware they were of the conversations that we were all going to be having, it seems like, right? Like, we're all talking about mutants and they throw in Quicksilver in a way that now I think
they're one step ahead of us
right.
at all times.
And now it seems like, you know, it doesn't, this is not the Quicksilver thing, at least, is not a door to the multiverse, I don't think. Like, I'm tempted to still say that this is kind of our option one from last week about
right.
this being just more of a fun fan servicey cameo thing. And the same thing, like, somehow they, there are so many of these little, like, hell type lines. Or like devil references going all the way back to like episode 2, where it's like they know, but again, is this all just kind of a red herring and they're messing with us? I don't know. As long as we're talking about Easter eggs, did you catch the Kick-Ass reference here?
I did. I actually did.
I thought that was pretty fun because obviously Aaron Taylor Johnson and Evan Peters were both in the Kick-Ass film. So that's kind of a fun connecting tissue there that Wanda brings in.
Okay, let's just get all these Easter eggs out of the way really quickly
because
I had a section for that too. Did you catch what movies are playing on the theater marquee?
Oh, I didn't.
The two movies that are showing are The Incredibles and Parent Trap, which I thought was pretty funny because The Incredibles is a movie about a super family where the kid has super speed, and Parent Trap is a movie about twins where they switch roles.
Right. Yeah, huh. That's also interesting.
So I think it's just an Easter egg, but that's another funny one, right?
Sure.
That's intentional.
Yeah. Oh, no, totally, totally. And, it's interesting because I would think, I wonder what that says about the timeline here, because I would think that this show is supposed to take place prior to The Incredibles.
That's what I was
going to
say,
out.
Too. Right. So The Incredibles came out in 2004, I think.
Hmm.
So that's already ahead of its time. But more importantly, not that this couldn't be happening in 2004, I think more importantly is that Parent Trap came out in the 90s.
Right.
So in real world, these movies did not come out at the same time at all.
Right.
So it'd be very odd that they'd be showing here. So does that just say that in general, this is coming apart?
Hmm.
This reality, this timeline, this... Because we have other hints of that too with
yeah.
the powers being used and, you know.
Yeah.
We have so much more to get to. Holy balls. We're only like... Okay. We have to also talk about Vision's experience here. And we
yeah.
can talk briefly about some of this stuff. But... I thought a couple things that were notable. When Vision is exploring, first of all, it's the first time we're seeing him lie to Wanda.
Yeah, I was going to note that.
He's operating under his own, you know, mind at this point.
Uh-huh.
He's on a mission. I love that plot line, by the way. He gets to the edge of town where it's super weird and people are frozen.
Yeah.
How do you explain that? Is that just, again, that Wanda's powers, like I was saying, like runs out of power as you get close to the edge? Because if she
yeah.
can, you know, create all these people and control these people... Why do some people not operate well? Like the Get Out shout out with
yeah.
the tear from the lady,
right.
the super weird clothes hanger. By the way, that Get Out tear. I mean, that's identical.
Yeah, yeah.
That tear.
Yeah, Candace
Where
pointed
again,
that out.
Like in Get Out, spoiler alert if you've not seen Get Out. But it's like their mind is in there, but they can't control their body. And that's very similar to what's happening here.
Well,
but again, why does Wanda create these people like that then?
Well, at the
it
is interesting though, because remember we got that line at the end of last episode where she's like, "You think that I could get everyone to their dentist appointments and control all these people?" And it makes you wonder, like, maybe they are under her influence, but only like within a certain radius can she actually kind of like puppeteer them. And so maybe everyone else is like in this default mode.
Which the expansion of the Hex makes you agree with that theory, except that these people are inside the Hex.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me think that what we saw here around the edges is going to get worse as the bubble is expanding, because there's just no way now. I mean, we saw that.
She can keep up?
Yeah, we saw it expand massively, right? So there have to be hundreds more, at least, people added into this that she now has to exercise whatever control over that she's exercising. And I definitely think we're going to see, to your earlier point, more of this start to come apart and unravel.
Okay. But more importantly, Vision has this conversation with Agnes like we've never seen before.
Yes.
Did that fundamentally change how you think about Agnes? Because I think it did for me.
I think so, but...
Okay. Hold on. the way Catherine acted this part was somewhat misleading to me. With Norm, we clearly see two versions of Norm. We see Norm in Westview, then Vision touches him, and you see the guy that's trapped in Norm's body saying, "I gotta get out, whatever." This was strange. For one, Agnes, when he meets her, is already like in a state of shock, not Agnes like we know at all. Like, she's locked up or depressed. She starts saying that she can't get out. There's no way. But then we do see that Vision is able to do the same thing that he did to Norm, where he touches her. Now we get a different Agnes, okay? But I feel like instead of two Norms, this is almost like three Agneses.
Yeah.
The first one was trying to do something and is depressed and frozen and can't move and can't get out.
Right.
The second one is now the, like, oh my gosh, you're Vision, you're an Avenger, which I have chills. Vision doesn't even know what the Avengers are because he's dead.
Right.
She says, "You're dead." So Agnes is aware that he is dead. This, whatever, Agnes number two. And then this is the weirdest thing to me. She panics. She gets stuck on that word of, "You're dead. You're dead."
Right.
"You're dead." And I'm like, she like glitches on that again or something.
Which is like Mrs. Hart from the first episode.
Right, but then this is the weirdest part. Then she snaps out of it and almost like maybe this is her acting. Maybe I'm reading too much into this. It's almost like she plays a third version of Agnes at the end with the laughing witch and then like, "All right, see you later, neighbor." It's almost like she's acknowledging that Agnes number one, I don't know, like, so, was different.
So
it wasn't just two personalities.
That's interesting, because I took that as two personalities. Like, I saw it as she was frozen like everyone else, and then he touches her.
No. There's frozen unaware, then there's frozen aware, then there's unfrozen and normal Agnes. Either way, keep going.
Well, so my thought was just that she's frozen. He touches her. She gets into, like, nobody can get out. Like, I think that when she's aware that Vision is dead and when she's like, "Yeah, nobody gets out of here," I read that all as the same kind of, like, unlocked Agnes. And then she starts, like, through all of that, doing the cackling stuff. And then he touches her again, and she gets back into, like, "Okie dokie, neighbor. Like, I'll see you later." So I took it as
still
just
two
versions.
Okay, but what was the very first Agnes then? Why was she driving that way and frozen but could still talk like the other people couldn't talk?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good...
What was she doing? Was she trying to leave, actually? And then, like, Wanda's power runs out, so she physically gets frozen?
That's how I read it. But you're right. I mean, that is a different layer than what we're given from the other frozen people. So maybe that is fair to say it's three versions, but...
Well, the reason I say it's a different layer is because, like I said, that makes me now think of her differently.
Right.
She did not seem like she was in control. She is obviously knowledgeable to an extent that we really haven't seen, maybe other than Pietro. right? To me, Pietro and Agnes are the most like aware of what's going on, but we have never seen Pietro be like this, which is like, maybe it's because she got so far away from Wanda, she's losing her power. But this is like still terrified, trapped Agnes too.
See, but I just want to leave the door open for that being an act.
Oh, see, I'm just excited. That's all.
See, no, I love it. I'm just wondering, like, okay, but if we step back, right, from the very beginning, we've all thought, oh, Agnes is somehow going to be a bad character, like from way back with the first trailers. And then we've been given a couple things through the show to kind of make us think that. And I think that it would be smart of them now to make us think, oh, no, she's totally exonerated. Look, see, she's in the same position as everyone else. But you're right. There's some weirdness there that doesn't quite add up with the way other people have been acting. And I'm just wondering if we find out that this is not everything it appears to be, and that she's like, maybe she was there for a different reason.
And I've said this so many times on this podcast already. It seems too obvious to have Agnes be the bad person.
Right.
With the Agatha Harkness and the witch shoes and the cackle and the witch costume at Halloween, like, it has to be a red herring, I think. She is different, though, in some way. I've just kind of calmed on the idea of her being... I guess the genius of this show is that each episode, you're kind of left thinking a different thing a little bit if you're trying to guess.
Yeah.
Like, there was a moment where we thought, Agnes is running this, Wanda's a victim. Then it was like, oh, it's all Wanda. Then it was like, wait, is she still doing some part of it? Then episodes like this are like, well, Wanda has the majority of the power and maybe Agnes doesn't know anything. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, and there are all these questions that I'm still, like, let's talk quickly about like the kids thing, because there was all this emphasis on the children stuff. Everyone was like, where are the kids? Vision finally, last episode, asks, where are the kids? Here we have kids everywhere. And Pietro directly raises that with Wanda saying, where were you hiding all these kids? And
I might add, his dialogue after that was also fascinating, where he just said, like, I get that it's, you know, you did the ethical considerations, you gave him better jobs, like, not just the kids, but the adults he was talking about.
And she's like, so you don't think that this
so
is
so he's
wrong.
Aware that Wanda did all of that. But yeah, the kids, he's like, I assume they were just sleeping before.
Right. Which, again, I'm just still not, like, it could be that they're saying that the show is giving us, like, for those of you who are wondering where the kids were, we're telling you now, they were just sleeping. But there's another part of me that's like, that whole conversation still seems like you could read that as him being like, hey, so like, I'm just curious, where are these kids the whole time? Or you could read that as him being, again, this plant and him actually trying to figure out, like, what is happening? Like, what are you doing here? How are your powers operating? Like, where were you hiding these kids? And then the way that he moves into like, oh, you know, look, whatever you're doing, I'm totally fine with it. I think this is ethical. You've done a good thing. Just kind of tell me how it's working. And again, it's like he's trying to get this information, and it makes me think that there's more going on than what the episode is giving us on the surface. Like, this is one of the first times that I feel like we're getting quote-unquote answers that I don't fully trust.
That's why my theory of him being from the outside makes so much sense, because why else would he be trying to get all that information and be aware that it is all fake? And I could see somebody on the outside, a producer, if you will, being like, oh, let's send her brother because her brother's the one she would trust and she misses him so badly. And then someone's like, oh, crap, we don't have her brother. Her brother's dead or whatever.
Right.
So let's send this guy in and just tell him play this role. Oh, but the kids. Okay, the kids. Hold on, the kids.
Yeah.
Were the kids residents of the original Westview that when she took over, she did just allow them to be sleeping, or her powers weren't strong enough yet, so they were on the fringe? And now that she knows Vision's aware of the kids, she's expanded her power to let the kids awaken, right? Like, it's an interesting question that Pietro's asking her.
Yeah, man.
Or did she physically create these kids after Vision asked? Which say, okay, we need to now make up some kids because everyone's worried about the kids. Also, what's funny about this in general is that, remember, We're watching this week by week, so we have 7 days in between, so it feels spaced out. But remember, the show creators are not reacting to our feelings directly because this has all been done.
That's what's crazy.
It's different than before. So it's like, this has all been done. So they would have had to anticipate that we would be saying, oh gosh, they're going to be so worried about the kids at this point. Okay, let's give them a kid's answer, right?
Right.
It's not like they can actually get live fan feedback and then change it. Which maybe makes it more genius.
For sure.
That they thought this all out ahead of time.
Yeah, some forethought.
Okay, Robbie, let's also keep going though, because I don't know about the kids and it's an interesting storyline, but I still need to talk about Vision from this point on and the outside world, because I thought that the scene of Vision flying to Agnes's car, then Agnes turning around and Vision starting to walk out was my favorite part of the show. Might have been one of my favorite scenes thus far. And there's this epic music that plays when he starts taking a step towards the barrier. And it's cool. It's like Truman Show, right? Where it's like he's finally going to get to see the edge of what's going on in this fake reality, which is so cool. And then I just got to add this. I thought when he actually tried to break through the barrier, that was the most moving Vision death I've had yet. I know that Infinity War is powerful, but I don't think I had the connection to Vision yet like I do because of this show now.
Uh-huh.
And his worry and sadness and helplessness. And when he is dying and saying, you have to help them. What are you doing? And then of all, Robbie, this is what Marvel's so genius about. Of all people to make me feel emotional, it's Darcy.
Right.
It's Darcy of any person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that goes, what are you guys doing? Help him. And I felt that. I have chills right now. Hashtag chills right now. Are you kidding me that it was Darcy and Vision?
I'm with you. That I thought that scene was so, so powerful. And to me, it was almost, whether intentional or not, a reference back to that scene in Infinity War, which is, I mean, just because the score is similar there, you get a little bit of this like almost slow motion thing. But man, yeah, it is, to me, what I thought was really powerful is that he starts out saying help, and you think he's asking for help. And then you realize, like you said, he's saying, no, they need help. Like the people inside need help, which is such a kind of heartbreaking thing because he still doesn't remember who he is, but he's still Vision. Like he's still good to his core and wants to help people. And that's it. I think that's what makes it so painful is you see all of that as he's confused, but he still has the kind of pure intentions that he's always had since we were first introduced to him in Age of Ultron.
And he's saying it despite knowing that it might hurt, quote unquote, Wanda.
Right.
To be like breaking her rules, if you will. Oh, it was so good. Okay. But also, first of all, I loved how they actually did it.
Uh-huh.
I love that they didn't say that Vision was so powerful that he could break through and not get affected by this. I was kind of like, oh, please don't let him just walk through. So I thought it was so cool that it's like sucking his body back in because he is dead.
Yeah.
Thank you for not reversing death way.
And I love the way
this is the way I'm okay with them, quote unquote, reversing death, if that makes sense.
Right. I like the way they executed it because there was a moment there where you're like, oh, he's getting through. And then just that first chunk of him flying back. And you're right, Darcy seeing that. And yeah, it was super well done.
But then also, I could not be more excited for next week's episode because we're going to find out what the heck their reaction to all this is now. Because now Vision has seen the outside.
Uh-huh.
He has begged for help. He has found out that he does die if he goes outside.
Yep.
And then he found out that Wanda has the ability to stretch the range so that he doesn't die.
Yeah.
So what's that conversation going to be like when he wakes up?
Well, I mean, basically, there's the fact that almost the entirety of this sword operation has now been sucked in. And that whole scene, by the way, was fantastic. Like the way that was all visualized with them turning into clowns and mimes and the ice cream truck.
Genius. Are you kidding me?
Which also this makes me think in terms of looking towards next episode, as things are getting more modern, like as the timeline's moving up, I'm like, what does this look like now? As she resets everything to be mid-2000s or whatever, 2010s, and things start to get closer to the version that they actually are, like I'm wondering how the illusion will stretch. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and then on top of that, Now Darcy's in there.
Yes.
So what's that going to be like? Because she is so aware of what's going on the outside. I could see this going one of two ways, kind of, honestly. Vision either now knows the truth on the outside and decides, I want to fight for this world because I don't want to die with Wanda.
Uh-huh.
Or I could see him say, this is wrong. They're on the outside watching us. This is all fake. I need to fight to stop Wanda.
Right. Right.
Well, either no, totally. Of which is so dope.
So I just have two more things I wanted to touch on before we wrap up. One, as we're talking about the bubble expanding, I do think that Monica going back in is going to be the way that she gets her powers. Like I think we've talked about before, Monica Rambeau in the comics was kind of a different Captain Marvel figure. And I think, you know, it's funny now because now that we don't really have the Infinity Stones around, which was the source for so many MCU heroes' powers, we do have to kind of get more creative. And I think this is going to be sort of the origin there with her molecules changing. It'll be interesting to see how that works next episode. The other thing I wanted to highlight, just so we don't forget again, holy cow, Kyle, the commercial in this one.
Okay, hold on Monica's thing, that's what I mean by maybe the cellular change will just be specific to her, or does that start a mutant thing? That's what I meant.
Right,
who knows?
Right, right.
The commercial is the weirdest what the heck thing ever.
Yep.
Yo Magic, the snack for survivors,
so
with the
dark.
Darkest looking commercial. What? I mean, that was maybe the creepiest thing they've done ever.
But also like so time period accurate. Like I think... Like, I remember when Captain Marvel did 90s, I always felt like by the time that movie even came out, that the whole 90s shtick had been done to death. And then that movie just kind of played on like, oh, look, she's wearing flannel. And it was just like, look, here's some Nirvana. And it was fun. But I also was like, ah, I feel like they're just kind of clearing the bar here. And here, like, this commercial was like the most... take you back to being a kid, like coming home from school and watching TV thing ever.
100% with the animation until the character can't get the magic yogurt open.
Yeah.
And then dies. Like that would not be in a commercial. That got
so
dark.
No, for sure. And that's, I don't know what, I would be interested to hear folks kind of analyze what that commercial means. The only takeaway I could
Absolutely.
Have is that it's some sort of like survivor's guilt on the part of Wanda. And that, you know, she's like the only person left truly out of all these people that she's loved. I don't know
or
what that, else
like,
that
Wanda's
could be.
Or that like Wanda's magic could save them, but they can't use it or can't get out of it and can't get it open to eat the yolk. You know what I'm saying?
Or
like
she can't truly bring people back to from the death.
Also, doesn't Ultron specifically say we're survivors? Like they were the survivors of the experiment, the lone survivors.
Yeah.
So something with that.
Man.
Okay, my last thing too then is we got to just quickly touch on the outside of the bubble because I got to just say, I can blaze through these, they're not important, but A, it was so dope to see Jimmy Woo punch somebody in like fight. I love seeing, did you like that? The punching Jimmy Woo?
I love that, yeah.
I love Jimmy like getting a little bit of a dark side to help out. I love that. Then, like we talked about earlier, something's going on with S.W.O.R.D., the reacquiring asset thing, like Vision actually being the target for them, not Wanda,
right.
in
yeah.
tracking this,
well, and,
is fascinating.
And Darcy says that there's something else that she thinks is being hidden behind the firewall that I don't think we've been told about yet. So I think there's another layer of a secret there.
Then they're meeting another person like we talked about earlier, but who that is going to be fascinating. Like, who has that ability?
Yep.
And again, just reiterating, like, what is S.W.O.R.D. doing? Like, who is sending in Pietro?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There are so many fun questions queued up for next week.
Dude, this might be the most hyped I am for an episode is next week. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I say that every time.
That's what, that's what Candace said, that we were just talking about how much next week is going to be, like, I say that every week, but yeah. I'm telling you, this show is, it's perfect, Kyle. It's a perfect show.
Oh, but that's what I'm saying. So... I can't wait for next week. We're just left with so many questions. Like, what is S.W.O.R.D. doing? Who is this person they're meeting? What is Vision going to do now that he's aware of what Wanda's doing? Is it actually Wanda? How does Agnes play into this? What are her kids? Are her kids mutants? Is the cellular transformation on Monica going to lead to mutants? Or is that just her powers? There are so many questions left to talk about. So hit us up, guys. Like, we love hearing your thoughts on this too. We've kind of shared our theories of what's happening right now, but let us know what you guys think as well. So as always, at the FFW podcast, anywhere on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, etc. We try to respond to those direct messages as much as possible. We've been getting so many of them, which has been so much fun. So if I don't give you a response, don't panic. I'm just writing them down and trying to bring them up in the episode. As we said earlier, the reviews you guys left on Apple Podcasts were fun. If you want to do that again, please do. Please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, Friends from Work. And don't forget, we have a website, theffwpodcast.com. Like I said, there's so many questions left. Let us know what you guys are thinking so that we can work that into next week's episode. But as always, thank you so much for listening. We're so grateful for every one of you, and we will see you next week on Friends from Work.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.